Access number 31464, Mr. Dennis Goodrich, rear 4. Yeah. Now, you were saying you were the only motorcycle.
I had a motorcycle, and we found a brand new aerial motorcycle in the village, and they gave that to me, so I could leave what we had, that and one truck and a few Gurkhas, and they said, well, we'll go on a reconnaissance to see what we can find out. So I had to take the lead on the on the motorcycle, which wasn't bad. But then when we got to this village, somebody stole that. And we got.
So what would a reconnaissance? What would you do? I mean,
just looking on the roads, because we felt we didn't know what was in front of us. We knew where they were behind us. We didn't know anything in front of us, so we didn't know what was there. But then there's a story to that. As we stopped in the village, I said to my friend, I was perfect, or the friend I was always with, we're going to try and get out of here if I can. So I did. I committed a crime then. I went up to the local, there was a little police station, and standing outside it was a Harley Davidson motorcycle. Now, the Japanese had already, the Dutch army had already surrendered, and the police had surrendered. So I said, they won't want that anymore, will they? So we finished it. And I rode that to the coast, hoping to get a boat on the coast somewhere, but we couldn't find a boat.
Now, what happened with the village? I mean, did the Gurkhas and you make a defence of the village?
Oh, yeah, tried it, but we couldn't. We didn't have
what do you remember of that?
Not a lot about it. I mean, the Gurkhas put up machine gun posts on the boat. When we left, they were still there. I don't know what happened to them. Well, they got taken prisoner, I believe, afterwards.
So what about the journey? You went on your motorcycle. Well, where did you go then?
We went on to the coast. I can't feel, there was no name of the place. We went to this coast and stopped there. And I said, if we can get a boat, perhaps we can sail it somewhere. And get in. But no, we couldn't find a boat. And then the Dutch army came along and said, you've got to surrender. We've already surrendered, and you've got to surrender because we can't stand any more of this. So they said it was surrender. Now, that was, March the 8th. And so, officially, I was a prisoner from March the 8th, and my 21st birthday was 2 days later.
Now, how do you actually surrender? I mean,
you
can get killed surrendering. It's not always easy. No. How did you actually go about surrendering to
them? Well, we sent the officer out with a white flag to say we couldn't do anymore, so the Japanese came into the village. I don't know what happened to the Gurkhas.
Were you still in this original village, or is this a different
village? No, this is a different village.
I thought so,
They call them kampongs out there, but I don't know which one.
And what happened? So you sent the officer with a white flag.
Yeah, and they said we were packing it, and they said they sent the officer. I said, well, you're all, he was an English speaking man, you're all prisoners of war from now onwards. So that was that. And then we stayed there for quite a while.
So what was the handover like? I mean, when the Japanese first came, I mean, did you have to get marched to where they were, or did they?
Oh no,
to
they came to us and surrounded us and sort of marched us away.
And how did they treat you? When they first arrived?
Not badly at all when they first arrived. I couldn't say they were badly treated. They were so full of themselves that they won.
Really? How did that show?
Well, it showed they were still quite happy and laughing and joking, you know, amongst themselves.
But no violence?
No, no violence.
Were you searched?
Oh, yes, they checked everything, yeah.
Did they take anything off you?
Oh, they took all their kit, everything. We had nothing left.
So what were you
just the clothes you're standing on, that was all. Nothing else.
And so how many of you were there at that time then?
I suppose about 50 of us in that group.
So all from 36 Squadron and this other squadron?
Yeah, 205 Squadron and 100 Squadron and 205 Squadron, the ones that were left through. All Air Force. And with a few army men, I don't know where they came from, but they attached themselves to us. I think they were probably run away from the deserters or something, but they came with us.
So what happens next then?
Well, next they were moved us to an airfield called Kalajati.
Do you know how you spell it?
K-L-A-D, J-A-T-I, Kalajati.
And what happened there?
They said, we've got to work on this here. Well, they put us in what they call billets, or they're just old huts, and they fed us a couple of meals a day and rice, and they said, you've got to work now because we're going to extend the airfield. We want you to help us extend the airfield. And that's what it is.
So tell us about the work. What type of work were you doing now?
Those little trucks they push along on rails. You had to fill those up with earth and take them and dump them on the end of the runway so that you could build the new bit of the runway, because it wasn't big enough for their aircraft to land on.
Was it hard work?
Oh, terribly hard, yeah.
And how did the guards treat you while you were working?
They didn't bother you very much as long as you kept working. You weren't allowed to stop. That's the main thing.
Now, what about the huts you were living in? What were the huts like?
Oh, nothing very much at all. They're just old native huts, nothing at all in with straw roofs and no walls on them at all, hardly. They're all open. Mind you, it was pretty warm there, so there's no bother in that way.
Any kind of bed?
No, just laying on the floor.
And what about the food? Because that's very important as a prisoner.
Just two bowls of rice a day. One in the morning and one in the evening. Nothing else.
Anything in it other than rice?
No, hardly. Well, they have a thing they call daigon, which is a piece like a turnip sort of thing. They used to chop that up and put it in. It was awful, really, but you ate it because it was there.
And how much rice? How big
a
cereal bowl?
A cereal bowl, about that size, yes.
And not mounded up, I presume?
Oh, no.
Did that diet affect you?
I think it did, yeah, straight away. You hadn't got much to work on, really. And then you started getting skin diseases from it.
Tell me about the skin disease. What are the ones that you noticed first?
I forgot what they call it. It was like prickly heat, they used to call it. You used to get that, and it came out in all over you with blisters and things. It's awful, it was. A lot of them suffered from that, and we had no medication at all. No
doctor. Impetigo?
It's not impetigo, no.
But like that, yeah.
But that was one of the things.
Did you get it?
Oh, yes, I had it on my legs and that.
And how bad was it?
Pretty bad at the time.
Did it itch, or was it just...
Oh, yeah,
it
itched like anything.
Did you scratch it?
Oh, yeah, I had to.
And no treatment at all?
No treatment, whatever, no.
And any... So how long would you... So how did the day work? Take me through a day. At Kalajati, then.
You'd be up about 6 o'clock in the morning and have your bowl of rice, and then you just march straight out toward the working place where we were still building this runway. And that was it. And work there till it got dusk and then come home again.
And straight to bed, or, well, food?
Food
and
on the, lay on the floor, yeah.
No bed. I mean, not much variety there. Day off?
No. Such as
no Sunday or...
No.
Now, were they still treating you well enough in themselves, that the guards?
The guards weren't too bad. They weren't very bad, no. I wouldn't say they were, no.
Was there any question of escape?
No, none whatever. There's nowhere you could go.
Can you tell us about it? Because a lot of people think...
No.
But it's not always possible, is it?
No, because if you're in a European country, yes. But if you're a European in an Asiatic country, they recognise you straight away. They knew who you were. As long as you weren't Dutch, if you were Dutch, you were okay, because that was part of Indonesia in those days, and it was run by the Dutch. But if you were British or Australian or American, they knew who you were straight away. So there's no way to escape, nowhere to go.
So that wasn't a thing. Was there any camp organisation? I mean, there were only the 50 of you.
No camp.
Was there any was there any way you were organised, or was it just...
Not really and truly. The CO in charge was hopeless. He was a wing commander, but he was hopeless. He couldn't...
Now, why was he hopeless? You don't need to mention his name, but what was hopeless of him?
He couldn't compete. He couldn't look after us properly. He couldn't talk to the Japanese. He couldn't do it, you know.
Why not?
I don't know what he was... He was sort of inept, actually. He couldn't do the job properly. No good at all.
Did everyone think that?
Oh, yeah, well, they all thought that in the camp. They used to go to the second in command and talk to him. It was the flight lieutenant. He was quite good. But this other bloke was a wing commander, and he was no good at all. I can't think of his name. But
what did that mean? I mean, what should he have done for you?
Well, he should have gone and seen the senior officer in charge of the Japanese and talked to them and say, what do you want, more food, or we want less work and things like that. But he wouldn't do anything. A typical example.
So it wasn't that he wouldn't do it, he wouldn't do it.
Another thing, during that time, I suddenly started getting very high temperatures and not sweating. I was absolutely boiling. So I went along to see him. I said, can you get me off for a day or so, because I can't work and I got high temperature and not sweating. Oh, that's hard luck. He said, you'll have to go back to work, won't you? That was him. I didn't have much of a car for him after that.
Was that a popular feeling about him?
Yes. He wasn't. I honestly can't think of his name, but he certainly wasn't in charge. He shouldn't have been in charge or anything like that. And he wasn't in the end, because the other officers took over that were there.
And tell me, how did he improve things?
No, he didn't improve anything. The others, but there's no improvement, whatever. It was just the same thing all the time.
So even though he was better, he still couldn't.
No.
Now, so how did you get on with the other prisoners? You know, I mean,
well, we were all friends together, mainly, no bother at all. We all looked after one another as much as we could.
No, because sometimes when people are all locked up together, they get a bit tense.
No,
none of that.
Well, no, you didn't have time for that. You just had to concentrate on what you were doing during the day and keep out of trouble. That's the main thing.
What do you mean, keep out of
well,
trouble?
Well, just didn't antagonise the guards and things like that. So you just did what they said, and that was it. Try and keep order.
Was that the way you had to do it? I mean, what would happen if you did antagonise? Oh, well, did you see any sign of that?
No, there was the punishment there.
So. So what would they do?
They'd flogging mostly, that sort of thing. They were very, very awkward in that. But, I mean, that's you brought it on yourself in those cases. You have to do what you were told, and that was it. Try and keep yourself clean, nose clean sort of business. That's the only thing you could do.
So what punishments did the guards give?
They would.
Did you get any punishments?
No, not there, no.
Right, so we'll leave that a bit. What about the latrines? Not always a nice topic. Tell us, but if you don't.
Just a hole in the ground with a plank over, that's all.
And what state were they in after a while?
Absolutely terrible.
In what way? Sorry.
Well, it was just smelly and all, nothing, hopeless. It's a terrible thing. And there was no cleaning, nothing like that. When it got full, you dug another hole and filled it up with earth. We had to do that ourselves.
What about washing facilities or showers?
No, nothing like that. You had one jug of water a day, that was it for everything.
Any trouble with lice early on?
Not then, no. None at all.
And what about any stomach, well, dysentery or diarrhea?
Yes.
Did that start early?
Yes, that started dysentery because of the padat, I presume.
It's often spelt with the latrines because that's how it spread.
That's right. Probably.
So how bad was it? Did you get it?
Yes, I had it for about 4 or 5 days, but I just had to wait till it went away. That's all you could do. No medicine.
How bad was it?
Very, very bad. And you still have to work with it as well, you know.
Now, what about any other health problems in those early days?
No, not in there.
How long were you working on this airfield at Kalajata?
I don't know.
It must be difficult.
I can't remember the time.
Now, we're just looking now. You've got this diary you made up when you got to Japan, I think it was. But it's got some notes in it. And one thing it says is that what money you had, you tried to buy sugar and fruit or something. Yeah. Where could you buy them? How did that work?
Well, the local villagers had it if they would sell it to you, but they couldn't get very much. And then the Japanese altered all the money. They wouldn't take the money anymore.
And... Were the local villages friendly or...?
Oh, not too bad. They were after what they could get, actually. If they could get some money from it, they would help.
Now, so, you're there for 5 months. We've looked it up. And then it says you go to Mekasani in Batavia.
That's Batavia, yeah.
So what's that about? Why did you go to Batavia, or was that just on the way?
I think that was just a staging post to take us to Japan, if I remember rightly.
And anything happened there? So is that all part of the voyage?
Yeah. No, that wasn't. We weren't on the journey then.
Right.
So you
just go to Batavia. So
Batavia was a port. The port where they took us from that port to Japan.
So what you seem to be at Batavia for about 2 months. Yeah. Would that be right?
Yeah, so we're doing some more work on an airfield there as well.
And that was on that Macassoni, Macassoni, from the look of your diary. Yeah. Now, how were things at Macassoni, Batavia then? We'll look up the spelling. So, you're working on an airfield.
Yeah.
And what do you remember about that?
Much the same as the other place, the same sort of dart and things like that there.
Nothing, were any better or any worse?
No, it's about the same.
And any incidents, anything happen?
Not as far as I can remember much.
I noticed it's just a one-line thing. Right, tell me, I think if we look at the voyage, you do a four-day voyage.
Yeah.
You go on the Singapore Maru.
Singapore Maru, yeah.
And you go to Singapore first.
Yes, yeah.
Anything about that?
Well, on the Singapore Maru, we just had tropical kit on and we were on the open deck, just laid down on the open deck for 4 days, didn't even have any proper protection, whatever. And they took us to Singapore.
And do you remember anything about, I mean, what was it like under those circumstances? Was it cold?
Freezing cold then, it was, yes. And I thought I'd got pneumonia, or what, so bad, but I hadn't. I had pleurisy, but I still had to carry on.
Now, pleurisy is serious, how?
It was in the back, yes, it was very bad. But then again, there was no medicine or anything like that, and they just said, get on with it, you know.
And anything else about the voyage?
No, just very cold and no hardly any food, and nothing much about it all.
So then you go to Changi.
Oh, that's it, Changi camp then.
Now that was the big concentration camp.
No,
is wrong word, isn't
no,
it?
No, Changi, that's a lot of people that haven't heard about Changi. Originally, Changi was an airfield, Air Force airfield. It was one of the biggest airfields in the Far East. When the Japs landed, they took it over and turned it into a prison camp. And that's where I was stuck there for a while.
Now, what was it like? Can you describe the camp?
Oh, it was a lot better than what we'd had before, because we still had the facilities at the Air Force, but there was in rooms, actually, not too badly. We didn't have beds, but we did have somewhere to sleep properly, and the food wasn't too bad, because they had galleys, and they still got those to cook the food and that on, you know.
So, the conditions were better?
Better, much better in Changi, yeah.
How big a camp was it?
Oh, it's vast. It was about as big as an ordinary airport over here now. It's a really big air force. That was the biggest one, Changi.
And how many people in about?
Oh, I don't know. There was Indian troops, British troops, Canadian troops. They're all in their prisoners in that place.
Now, you get different guards here. Can you talk? Because it stops being Japanese and starts being Sikh and Tibetan.
Oh, now, that's why. The Sikhs went over to the Japanese. There was a man called Chandra Bose in India, and he made friends with the Japanese and ordered all the Sikhs to go over to the Japanese side, which they did, and they were guarding us instead of the Japanese.
Now, what were these Sikh guards like?
Awful. But there was one thing about them they didn't like. The Gurkhas were in the camp as well. And they were frightened of the Gurkhas. They wouldn't go near a Gurkha. They wouldn't. Absolutely terrified of them they were. Because the Gurkhas still, they were really tough, you know. They wouldn't have them.
And how did they treat you, these Sikh guys? You say they were terrible. In what way were
they? Oh, they would order you about, do all sorts of things. They would beat some of the blokes. They were awful. They really were, the Sikh guards. And most of them came from the Sikh army or from the... In the old days in Singapore, they were always the local police who always were Sikhs and all that. So all those people were Sikhs. They wouldn't do manual work. They all did that sort of job. And when they came in, they did this, took over from the Japanese.
Now, what about the Thai guards?
Thai?
It says Thai, yeah. Together. You don't remember the Thai guards?
No.
Okay. What exactly were you doing in the camp at Changi? Had you got better from your pleurisy?
Oh, no, it got better eventually. I didn't do an awful lot in there. We couldn't do much because there was nothing to do in that camp. I started to do the extension work. The Japanese were going to extend it and make it into a much bigger airfield, which they did eventually, but they forced us to start working on it, but same sort of thing.
Now, there's a controversy over the Red Cross ship arriving and the Red Cross goods. Do you remember that?
Was that in Japan?
No, while you were there at Changi.
Oh.
Seems to be a dispute with the British Army about whether you were entitled to the RAF. Can you tell me about that?
I don't remember a lot about it. I know we didn't get any ourselves. We didn't get any Red Cross help ourselves.
You didn't get any Red Cross parcels?
Not then, no. I see.
Now, another thing is, you seem to have got... This says a lot of dysentery and deaths from dysentery here.
Yeah.
Seven
yeah,
a day. Yeah,
terrible.
We're looking at a copy of your diary, see, that's what... Were you aware there was that much dysentery? Did you get dysentery still again there? Or
no.
Did you only have it the once?
No, I had it the once.
So, Anything else happening at this camp?
Not a lot, no.
What is it? You weren't there long, were you?
No, not very long, no.
Just till... Now, did you know what was going to happen to you? Because a lot of them went off from there to Thailand.
Yeah.
Or to work on the railway.
Yeah, that's
did
right.
you know about the railway?
No, I didn't know anything about it at all, no.
And did you know about the possibility of going to Japan as well?
Yes, I knew we were going to Japan eventually.
So tell me about the trip to Japan, because you go on November the 27th on the Karakura Maru.
Yeah.
And you arrive on the 7th of December. Now, what do you remember about that trip? Because some of those trips were dreadful, apparently.
Pretty rough. It was just the same sort of thing. No.
No different from the other
no
one?
No different from the other, no.
But apparently you got scurvy.
Yeah, we all had that.
Tell me a bit about scurvy. I mean, was it real proper scurvy? That's from lack of vitamins,
isn't
it? That's
from lack of vitamins, yeah. And the thing that's good for it is lime juice, but we can never have any medicine at all.
So, but other than that, not much you remember about that. Now, what happened when you arrive at Nagasaki?
Yeah.
And that's where you stay, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
What was your reception like when you got to Japan? I mean, did the locals...
We didn't see any locals at all. We only saw the Japanese army. They were kept out of their way. Oh, and Japanese Navy, that's one. They're the ones that looked after us. They were our guards for the first bit.
Now, where did you go to? Because you seem to be on a small island. Now, do you know the name of the island?
Koyagi. Koyagi, I think it is.
Do you know how you spell that? I know it's
Koyagi. Koyagi. It's, yeah. Agi. That's it. Koyagi, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it was a Koyagi. Something like that.
Well, we'll look it up. And is that the island you stayed on?
That's the island I stayed on. It was a shipbuilding base. I'm building ships there.
And what were you doing there?
We're supposed to be building ships.
And what was the camp like, if you see what I mean? Can you describe it?
Well, it was very sparse, really. It was quite big, but there were no proper toilet facilities. No beds. Never had a bed all that time. No beds at all. Just lay on the floor all those years. Never had a bed. They were just about huts with about, 30 people each one, I suppose, something like that.
So were you just lying on the floor then?
No. They had a raised platform about 2 feet, half of the ground. You laid on that platform, and that's all you had. No.
How much space to yourself?
Oh, just enough room for you to turn around with the boat next to you. That's all. No space at all. A few feet.
And what was the food like there?
That was, again, that's the same sort of stuff. Terrible. Rice and daigon stuff. Nothing at all. Nothing.
Daigon?
Special. That's that stuff I told you. But it's like a
turnipy
thought, and that's all it is.
It seems that you mentioned dried fish.
Yeah, that's supposed to be dried fish, but they do. You get that occasion. That was a present if you got it, but it wasn't very good.
How was the food actually cooked and issued to you?
Oh, they had a big cookhouse there, and the thing to do if you were one of these blokes, you could work in the cookhouse. You could eat as much as you wanted to. People were chosen to work in the cookhouse, and they fed themselves before they fed you.
And but did you ever get a job in there?
No, I didn't want to know anything about it. Sergeant in charge was an absolute martinet in charge of that. He used to go around everything he found dirty. He'd do all over again. He'd punch people, do anything wrong. And just as a rider to that, at the end of the war, he was taken prisoner as a war criminal.
I'll come back a bit to him. So how was the food issued to you? I mean, you know, because there can be arguments about food in prisoner of war camps.
No, they used to come round in the hut and leave a big bowl of stuff in the hut for you. Somebody in charge was chosen to dish it out, and he had to be very careful that he got it all right, otherwise somebody got none. Whoever's in charge.